Kritva
Savyam
the left.
Pada Padmam
lotus feet.
Cha
and
Januni
on his knee.
Bahum
hand.
Prakoste
in the end of the right hand.
Akshamalam
Rudraksha beads.
Asinam
sitting.
Dakta
Mudraya
with the mudra of argument.
Translation.
His left leg was placed on his right thigh, and his left hand was placed on his left thigh. In his right hand, he held Rudraksha beads. This sitting posture is called Virasana. He sat in the Virasana posture, and his finger was in the mode of argument. Purport by Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The sitting posture described herein is called Virasana, according to the system of Ashtanga Yoga performances. In the performance of yoga, there are 8 divisions, such as Yama and Niyama, controlling, following the rules and regulations, then practicing the sitting postures, etc. Besides Virasana, there are other sitting postures, such as Padmasana and Siddhasana. Practice of these asanas without elevating oneself to the position of realizing the Super Soul, Vishnu, is not the professional stage of yoga. Lord Shiva is called Yogeshwara, the master of all yogis, and Krishna is also called Yogeshwara. Yogeshwara indicates that no one can surpass the yoga practice of Lord Shiva, and Yogeshwara indicates that no one can surpass the yogic perfection of Krishna. Another significant word is Taka Mudra. This indicates that the fingers are open and the second finger is raised, along with the arm, to impress the audience with some subject matter. This is actually a symbolic representation. Kritarau Dashine Savyam Pada Padmam Chajanuni Bahum Prakoste Shamalam Asinam Takamudraya. Translation again. His left leg was placed on his right thigh, and his left hand was placed on his left thigh. In his right hand he held Rudraksha beads. This sitting posture is called Virasana. He sat in the Virasana posture, and his finger was in the mode of argument. Om Magyana Timrandusya Gananjana Slakaya Shaksumritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasapadane Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namne Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivise Sasunyavadi Prasachadya Shatayane. So in the purport, Prabhupada is describing that there are different yoga postures in the Ashtanga yoga practice. Nowadays, yoga is very, very popular. Just a few months ago, we did a program at Urban Yoga about the, I think it was called the Perfection of Yoga or something like that. Can't even remember the title. So we are describing about the different yoga system, what is yoga, and lead on, and how the modern day and the present day, when people are practicing yoga, they're actually missing the whole goal of the yoga. Because yoga means yoke, to connect. So when they practice yoga, what are they connecting to? So they miss the whole goal. It's like doing a lot of activities but not getting, like going into the kitchen and cooking a whole pot of different dishes and not tasting it. So they perform all these different yoga asanas, but mostly just to, yes, when they practice yoga, they get a healthy body with the different postures and different breathing exercises. I was speaking with Prabhu just now, inquiring about his health. how you say, it's a little better, and he was doing some pranayama, and that helps a lot, he said. So, all these pranayama, yama, niyama, asana, all this to prepare someone in the right physical and mental state, so that one can focus the consciousness onto the goal of yoga, which is Yogeshwara. In the earlier part of Bhagavatam, it's described how all yoga practice is ultimate man to realize Krishna or Narayan. Narayana Parayogi. That's the whole goal of yoga, to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, along the way of practicing yoga and austerities, one can also again become misled. There's so many obstacles along the path of spiritual life that can mislead one from the ultimate goal. When one practices yoga, one can also develop a lot of power, mystic power, and they get carried away by those mystic power. Prabhupada often gave the Prabhupada gave the example of how in his childhood there was this one yogi, very non-yogi, that he can walk on water. And Prabhupada's father pointed out to him, he said, this yogi spent so many years performing austerities to develop that mystic power to walk on water just to save a few paisa. Because you can easily get on a boat across the Ganges, and you, at that time you just made one paisa or half a paisa or whatever it cost. And they become proud, and some start thinking that I'm actually the Supreme. I'm one with the Supreme. So on the spiritual path, there's so many different obstacles that Maya present to misdirect and sieve out those who are not fully sincere. Only those who are very, very focused. That's why in spiritual life one has to be very, very focused to know what is the goal. Even in material life, all these so-called success guru, they'll tell you, you have to have a goal. And you have to be very fixed in your goal. Every morning you wake up in the morning, you have to read what you're going to do, how you're going to achieve your goals. Every night you go to bed, you have to meditate on how what you're going to do the next day to achieve your goal. And these people, they're very, very focused. All these successful people, they're very focused. When you listen to them, they're very determined. So it's not different from spiritual life. In spiritual life also one has to be very determined, has to be very focused, very have to be very clear what one wants to achieve in spiritual life. Of course in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explained that there are four kinds of people come to him. Some people come to him because of distress. So if that's the main reason why we come to Krishna to become relief from distress, then once our condition becomes okay, we'll forget. It's that I'm okay. I don't need Krishna anymore. I've achieved my goal. Or some, they come to Krishna and just for some wealth. And when they get their wealth, they say, I'm okay. I don't need Krishna. Or they're just inquisitive. But only those who are searching for knowledge. Although all four of them are pious, considered as pious, but in the next verse, Krishna explained that out of all these four, those who are seeking for knowledge, they are the best. In terms of spiritual knowledge, there's no end to it. And the more we understand and gain this knowledge of Krishna consciousness, the more we appreciate the wonderful qualities of Krishna, and the more we become attracted to it. So, the process of Krishna consciousness is not something very complicated, actually something very, very simple. And Prabhupada often said that we make things complicated. A simple process, but we make it very complicated. We don't have to perform all these severe austerities that past sages have to perform. We don't have to go to the forest. Nowadays, hard to find a forest. You may be sitting in a nice forest, meditating, And the next thing you know, there will be bulldozers coming, flying down the trees. Now I had lunch with my daughter yesterday, and she was telling me that the size of one football field, and when we say football, we mean soccer field, not the Aussie rule football, that's bigger. Like one soccer field of forest has been demolished every minute of the day. Every minute. The size of one football field of trees are demolished. And that is all for the cattle industry mostly. Because she saw this video called Cowspiracy. Anyone seen it? You seen it? Yeah. And one of her friend saw that video with her. Straight away she became vegan. Immediately. Because he used to do some work with UN, helping the children. And you can see how, despite all the effort, they were not getting the real help. So when he saw this video, he connected it. Actually, the problem lies somewhere else. So we do not have to perform all these severe austerities. And sometimes also, at least personally, sometimes I feel like when we read about all these yogis, about all these different austerities, devotees perform so much austerities, like Dhruva Maharaj was just eating dry fruit, even fruit that is rejected by monkeys, and then just leaf, and not even that, just drinking a drop of water, and not even breathing, or maybe breathing once a month. I said, I'm so far remote from this kind of austere practice. And you may feel a bit dejected. Where do I stand in my spiritual life? I'm not performing any of these austerities. And recently, I was listening, because I drive a lot in my work, so I turned my car into like a mobile Bhagavatam. There's classes going on constantly. So every day, 2-3 hours at least of lectures, listening. And I can't remember, was it Radhana Swami, Ridhana Maharaj? I've really listened to so many of them. Can't remember who said what. But the assurance from them is also recently I met Guru Das Prabhu, and he was also describing the time when they were with Prabhupada. It's not like Prabhupada was presenting that we have to do this austerity, we have to follow these rules and that rule, so many rules and regulations. But how Prabhupada attracted everyone to Krishna consciousness was by his personality, by his purity, the power of his purity and power of his compassion that actually attracted everyone. He didn't even say anything about rules and regulations in the beginning. When the first time they gave initiation, nobody even know about rules and regulations or regulatory principles. That was just, that was told to them only the day before, even on the yajna. And they had to negotiate down from 64 rounds to 16 rounds. All Prabhupada gave was just gave everyone Krishna. And that is in line with the instruction of Rupa Goswami. What do you say? What are the two most important principles in Krishna consciousness?
Always remember Krishna and never forget it.
Yes. That's the most important principles. What we are doing does not help us to remember Krishna and not forget Him, then what is the use of those activities? So everything we do is meant to remember Krishna. That is our austerity. And the way Prabhupada set up everything, our daily life, there's so much austerity already built into our daily life. Right from the time we wake up in the early morning. I mean, who? It's very rare, a few, love, enjoy waking up early in the early morning. Although it's really nice when once you're up, you know, once you get up. And of course, once you develop the habit of getting up, you don't think so much about it. You just get up. But if someone is not used to it, for example, when I first came to the temple, that was one of my biggest challenges. Like, I was asking myself, is that what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, being up at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning? Because I felt like my head just hit the floor and someone was waking me up. There was no sleep in between. And someone was waking up, "Oh, wake up, wake up." I said, "What do you mean wake up? I just went to sleep." And I questioned, is that what I'm going to do every day, waking up this hour of the day and taking bath, cold shower? Sometimes even in India, I remember during the first couple of years when we went on the parikrama, that must have been someone 87, 88, something like that. There was not much facilities. It was organized by Pada Yatra India. So the facilities was very bad. And we had to find a pond somewhere. And it's cold. We get up in the morning, 3:30, 4 o'clock, and try to take a bath in the pond or river. It's very cold. The water is very cold. And you have to sit there and just stare at this brother Brahmana. I keep reminding oneself. And that one year, after taking that bath in the morning, I was so cold, I was freezing, and I was feeling very weak during Mangarati. I could not stand up during Mangarati. I was leaning against the pillar during Mangarati. And I was thinking, how am I going to continue the other 8 days? And in those days, it was 9 days of parikrama. And that was just the first day. I said, I'm already feeling so weak on the first day, how am I going to continue? So we were in the Jagannath temple, then we walked to the Jalangi, somehow managed to get onto the first boat across together with Kavichandra Maharaj and Rohini Sutta Prabhu. And when we got to the other side, we were stopped from moving further because we have to wait for the rest. So Kavichandra Maharaj took us to just a little further up the road, and there was this place where they were rolling the sugar cane juice where they make goo. So I had my lota with me, and we took one big lota, drank our sugar cane juice, another lota, filled up with a lot of sugar. So then I was feeling very energetic. And later on, we arrived at Nishingapali. Usually, the previous year, we were camping at Nishingapali after lunch. We were just there. But that year, there were some villagers further down wanted to host the parikrama party. So after lunch, after bathing in the lake, we started walking. And by then it was like 1-2 o'clock. And in India, when it's 1-2 o'clock, midday sun, the car melt on the road. So me and my friend, we were okay, we had shoes on, so we were walking. Then on the side we saw Shiva Maharaj and Bhakti Vaibhava Maharaj. They were walking without shoes. Then Bhakti Vaibhava Maharaj called me and said, "Chiranjeev, come here." "Yes, Maharaj, give me your shoes." And his shoes also. So took my shoe, took his shoe, and then both of them were wearing our shoes and walking. Now we were hopping around on the hot tub, trying to avoid the hot tub. And got to the camp. But I was still on a high from the sugar cane juice. So after lunch, I was feeling so much energy. I didn't know what to do with that energy. And I saw these sannyasis had feet in the water, trying to release the tension and all the walking. So I approached, I can't remember who I approached first. I approached one of the sannyasis. He said, no, you go to Bhakti Charan Maharaj. So I went to Bhakti Charan Maharaj. I said, "Maharaj, can I just give you a massage?" Yeah, give him a massage. Then another sannyasi came in. He said, "Oh, you give massage?" I said, "Yes, Maharaj. Can I be next?" And before I know it, it was a whole line of queue of sannyasis waiting for some massage. And at that time, I was specializing in only foot massage. So I was doing foot massage for all the sannyasis. So every day after the lunch, when we start at the camp, I had to deal with the sannyasi. They said, come over. So every day for 4 or 5 hours, I just give him massage. So much so, one time, Jayaveda Swami also came. And he came a couple of times and I said, Maharaj, there's still 2 or 3 in front of you. He said, anyway, I'm going to sleep now. It doesn't matter when you finish, you just come into my tent. So when I finished everyone, I came to his tent and I massaged him when he was sleeping and went on. So that was the most blissful time I ever had on Parikrama. But it was austere. I mean, but I didn't feel the austerity. Every day, 4 or 5 hours of massage is not easy. And it was even one time towards the end of the Parikrama, I was massaging Mahavishnu Swami, this English one, young one. And he had so much knots on his head, anywhere I touched, he would be screaming in pain. He was wriggling all over the floor when I was massaging and trying to avoid. And I was following him. And he was cursing me. I said, Jiranji, you're hurting me. I'm not going to allow you to touch me again. And I said, alright, did my service, left. So next day we came to a camp, I was very happy dancing in the kirtan. One brahmachari came up and said, you're Jiranji? I said, yes. He said, Mahavishnu Swami is looking for you. So I came there. He said, yes, Maharaj. Jiranji, give me a massage. And he continued right after the Parikrama back to the Mahapur temple where Sridhar Maharaj was asking. Every day I would be going there to give him a massage. So it was very blissful. So it became very, very popular and got a lot of mercy from the sannyasi performing that so-called austerity of just doing the massage and going to sleep late and getting up early the next morning. So actually, austerity is this day in our devotional service, but when we're performing devotional service and absorb in the service, we don't feel like it's austerity. Again, in the morning, we have darshan of the deities, and sometimes guests they come and visit, or reporters come and stay overnight, they can't understand how this Hare Krishna at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, they're fully awake, singing and dancing. They've never encountered, experienced anything like that before. Even on the weekend, 4 or 5 o'clock, they're stumbling out of the clubs. When devotees are going for Mangarati, they're stumbling out of the clubs. Completely drunk. And japa, Bhagavad Gita says, out of all our sarita, in the chanting of japa. And following the regular tradition, that's austerity. And following rules, the order, instruction of the spiritual master, that's great austerity. We have to curb our false ego, we have to curb our so-called independent nature to do what I want, do what I feel like doing. But no, I have to follow the instruction of my spiritual master. That's a great austerity. So we actually examine our spiritual life, there are a lot of austerities. And going out preaching, that's great austerity. Going out this now Prabhupada marathon, going out distributing Prabhupada's books, such austerity. Especially with going out whole day, 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours a day, standing on your feet in the hot sun. Sometimes the summer here can be what mid-30s, high-30s, it's still hot. In other countries, it's minus 15, minus 20. Even I've seen devotees went up to the north of Sweden, minus 30, and they were out on this building. They asked me to join the party. I said, no, you go, I stay down here. Minus 15, minus 20, that's what I can manage. Minus 30 is beyond me. Right? And they're out, and such austerity. In those days, we didn't know how to take care of ourselves. Instead of carrying a few books in our hand, we had this big book bag. We didn't have rucksack. We have cloth bag that some Mataji and temple sewed together. And we have 20, 30 Bhagavad Gita in that bag. running around. And Sweden is not a big place. I mean, it's a big place, but not very populated. And I love to, my Sankirtan leader was Smita Krishna Swami. At that time, he was a brahmachari. And I told him, I said, it doesn't matter where you drop me off, as long as I'm the first one to get dropped off. So he just dropped me off in some villages. Maybe there's 1,000 people in the village, 2,000 people. Just one street, that car just passed by. And sometimes you don't see anyone on the street. And when you see someone on the street, you run. With a huge book bag, you run to approach that person and try to sell the book. And when you finish, you see another person on the other end of the street. And you run. So the whole day was like that, running back and forth, up and down the street. Trying to find someone to distribute books to. And it was good. Sometimes I do 80 books, 100 books a day, just in a small village. And I love the idea when Maharaj showed me, he said, yeah, Prabhupada said, when you're pioneering in one place, you guarantee you go back home, back to Kali. I said, yeah, send me to all these villages where no devotees have been to before. I want to be pioneers. I want to have secure my ticket. So that's austerity. And when you approach people with good intention, but some people are nasty, they're just nasty. Sometimes they're just drinking on you know, Harinam party, they have the beer and they just pour it right over you. You experience that in Melbourne? Not so much, huh? In Sweden, not much, but Denmark, we get that sometimes, Copenhagen. And then you're soaking in beer. So that's austerity, and devotees do that. But when do we actually consider it like austerity? Most of the time we don't think about it. We just do it. So we look at the yogis that may perform great austerity, but we cannot do those austerities. And most probably they can't do the austerity that we do. They're high in the Himalaya, they're high in the deep in the forest. Ask them to come out in the city. I said, no thanks. Too much maya. Too much distraction. And that's our challenge, that's our austerity. Despite all the austerity, all the distractions that we have, we still go out and remain focused. It's hard. But when we are focused on the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and focus on following trying to please the spiritual master, then we are like in a bubble. We're not affected by what's going on around us. We are protected. And we see the Harinam boys traveling around, and we see only the pictures of all the chanting and dancing and fun. But there's austerity, isn't it? No? Austerity? No. With all the traveling? Yes, yeah. And at the end of the day of jumping up and down, you would like someone to massage your feet too. So they are performing their austerity. But our austerity is anandavadma. It's full of bliss. It's blissful. Because we are engaging in activities of the spiritual soul. Our activities is connecting with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Krishna is pleased, all the living entities become pleased. So it's pleasurable. Our activities are pleasurable. And that's why you can keep going, doing the same activities over and over and again, decades after decades after decades, and still find the same bliss. Just recently I was just contemplating, people talk about happiness, but for devotee, we're not so much talking about happiness. Because happiness, like pain, they come and go. What we're talking about is more satisfaction. You can be happy about something when you gain something, when you do something, you can be happy. People do become happy. But it's flickering, it's past. But the deep satisfaction is very rarely that people get out in the material world. But devotees get that. We all get our satisfaction from different activities. Sometimes when you're a pujari, you're on the altar, Your worship did this very nicely, or your dresser did this very nicely. You feel a deep satisfaction. Or sometimes you taste some nice, very nice prasadam. You feel satisfaction. Or you done some service. For me, satisfaction is when you have a really nice kirtan. And after a nice kirtan, you have someone who is very interested. You preach to someone and they are, you're really making a difference to that person. And I walk away really, really satisfied. And I feel, this is it. What more do you want in life? Such a simple activity. And why so much satisfaction? Because it's pleasing Krishna. Krishna is pleased by the activity. That's why you feel satisfied. And this satisfaction goes beyond the feeling of happiness and distress. Way beyond that. So, austerity is part and parcel of our devotional life. Within the 9 processes of devotional service, it's built into it. And we don't have to artificially look for it. We don't have to create more austerities in our life unnecessarily. We have our fasting days. Some people love it, okay, that's fine. It's for them. But it's not that everyone has to do it. Some devotees love to fast all day on the Ekadasi. That's fine. At one time in our temple in Copenhagen, we had about 9 or 10 of us who observed complete fast on the Ekadasi for 1 whole year. But the actual fasting is the next day you're not supposed to eat, you just drink some milk and continue in the fasting. That's actually Ekadasi fasting. So some they like it, that's fine. But we have also seen that sometimes devotee when just too much into practicing austerity, they become hard. They become proud. And with the false ego development, say, wow, I'm such an austere devotee. I'm a great devotee. So austerity is not supposed to be harden our heart. Our process is supposed to soften the heart. The devotee's heart is like molten gold. But actually pure gold is very soft. That's why when they make jewelries, they don't make jewelries with pure gold. Only in the old days, I have a ring that my god-grandmother gave when I got married. Give me a ring. And that the ring was practically pure gold. I know because when I play madanga on it, it comes to become square. Instead of round, it becomes square. I can't use it anymore. That's pure gold. It's soft. Now they mix with metal. So our heart is supposed to be like molten gold, very soft, compassionate. And that's the what Prabhupada is teaching. Earlier on in the purport, he was describing that our austerities is different. We do not perform the same austerity. It's a different nature. Our austerity is Harinam Sankirtan. That's our austerity. That's the yuga now. Performing Harinam. And of course, Prabhupada introduced book distribution, the Brihat Madanga. So those two go side by side. And when we just engage ourselves in these activities, that's more than enough austerity. More than enough. Don't have to add on. And by performing this austerity and following the line and instruction the Prabhupada has given, we achieve perfection in life. In one of the tape I was listening to was memories of Prabhupada, different Prabhupada disciples describing their anecdotes of their contact with Prabhupada and realization. One time, Prabhupada in a lecture, he was very serious, and he was talking about how it should be 100% surrender to Krishna. Not even one tinge of false ego or maya. And he uses on about how we have to be 100% surrender to Krishna. And the devotees were becoming a bit despondent. Whoa! How are we going to achieve that? Not even one tiny little grain of Maya is allowed. And Prabhupada observed, and he probably could sense the feeling of the devotees. Then he looked out and said, at least 90%. At least 90%. Then he can go back home back to Gali. Then he got off the Vyasasan. And it was a very high Vyasasan. As he got down, his one foot on the down, he said, he thought of things and said, at least 80%. Then the devotee was feeling a little better. And Prabhupada got off the Vyasasan and started walking out of the room. Temple, as he walked out of the temple, he turned around. At least 70%. So we are riding on the compassion of Prabhupada. That probably is a negotiation he had with Krishna. You expect all these Malecha, Yavanas, all these backgrounds that they come from, 100% in this one lifetime, unlikely. 70% I can deliver, or 80% I can deliver. So it's special mercy. So, followers of Sri Prabhupada get that special mercy. We perform our sadhana, but on top of that, there's also Prabhupada's mercy that we are, that is helping us along to fill up whatever we lack. And Krishna said, Bhagavad, for those who worship me with love, I carry what they lack, I preserve what they have, and I carry what they lack. So all we have to do is just try to be sincere. And I know sometimes we, as we look at things, we think, I'm so far away. It's just, I still have so many desires, I still have so many bad habits and so on. And I think like that too, after so many years. But what I did, the trick I did with my mind in the early days is that, don't worry about how many steps I have to take. I follow the Chinese wisdom. Every thousand step begins with the first step. All I have to concentrate on is the next step. I just focus on the next step. Once I have my foot on the next step, I take another step. And I take another step. One small step at a time. And this is also something I use a lot in my counseling and coaching. And devotees are so overwhelmed. Sometimes they're just overwhelmed with difficulties or issues and so on and so forth. I said, don't. Then they try to achieve that perfection or whatever they want to achieve in one big step. I said, don't even go there. Just think of where you are now. Where's the next small step? The next small victory that you can achieve. The next small step that you can achieve. Because every small step we make is a great victory in our fight against Maya. Right? Every small step. Clap ourselves on the back. Yes, I make some progress today. And tomorrow, I make another progress. I make a little more progress. Today, I wish I did my round. I did my service. I make some progress. So every day we just add on. And before you know it, 10 years has passed, 20 years has passed, 30 years have passed, 40 years have passed. And you look at all the little small steps, become one gigantic steps. You know? And that's how we can gradually make progress. Some, they can take bigger steps, by all means take bigger steps. If you can't take bigger steps, take small steps. As long as we're moving forward. So that the austerity of the mind, controlling the mind to think positively. How we can positively engage ourselves in activities of Krishna consciousness to keep on making progress. And then our austerity is developing humility, tolerance. And rather Swami explained, humility. When humility in the association of devotees means when you're in the association of devotees, you think, I do not know better than you. He said, that's humility. If you think that I know better, I know more than you, I know I'm better than you, then that's not humility. And sometimes devotees manifest this humility in a very artificial way. Like sometimes devotee may say, oh Prabhu, please give me some instruction. Oh Prabhu, please give me your mercy. And what normal response? No. I don't have any. That's miserly. So I ask, give. The Prabhu, I don't have much, but whatever I have is yours to take. They give me a blessing. Prabhu, I don't have very much, but whatever austerities I perform, whatever service I've done, the Krishna is pleased, and the result of that is all yours to take. Offer it. Instead of saying no. Oh, please give me instructions. I do not know much, but I've heard, I've read in the Bhagavad Gita, I've read in Srimad Bhagavatam, I heard so and so say like this in the class, and just repeat. If someone asks, don't deny. Be generous to share whatever little we have. The beauty of Krishna consciousness, the more you share, the more you grow. The more you give, the more what you give away grows. It's not like in the material world, you give away some money and then it's gone. In devotional service, the more you give, the more you have. And that I can say from personal experience. How amazing it is, the nature of Krishna consciousness. So this is a very, very beautiful thing that we have, and it's a very wonderful gift that Sri Prabhupada has given us. All we have to do is just try to appreciate it and not make things unnecessarily more difficult than it need to be. And recently I've been just reading, I finished reading the book by Yogeshwara Prabhu on Prabhupada. I'm reading from Gurudas Prabhu. And you can see this, the beautiful interaction that Prabhupada had with his devotees. It's just filled with love, filled with compassion, how Prabhupada deal with the devotees. Never judging them, never rejecting them, accepting whatever little service. I mean, in the beginning, devotees didn't know much. Sometimes what we offered is not known by any means, like Brahminical standard. No, and the kind of deity worship, like they were describing when they first installed Jagannath, Baladeva Subhadra, and Prabhupada said, just bring gift. They literally bring anything they have. I mean, some of these things were not very offerable. Some will bring half-cut fruit, a half-cut loaf of bread. Some will bring an offer. And Prabhupada just accepted it all. Accepted their devotion. The spirit of devotion that they have. So they're offering, and something that usually you don't offer to the deities, but they don't know any better. And Prabhupada took that little spark and he fanned it, encouraged them. And see how that little spark grew into raging fire. So much so, and how much they do. And Prabhupada had that kind of vision. And they were saying that even in the early days, when the early devotees, they were hardly out of their hippie lifestyle, Prabhupada had a map of the world. So and so will go here, so and so will go there and there, and he already mapped out the whole world where all the different devotees were going. And some devotee may have just joined the temple a few days ago, And so right now you're going to be holding that. That vision, that pioneering spirit, that bonus, and the bonus that those devotees had in the early days, the fearlessness that they have, just venturing out with nothing. Where did that all come from? They were not thinking of it as austerity. They're just thinking of love. Prabhupada has shown us so much love. We love Prabhupada. We want to do something to please him. And this, that's all that is to it. I mean, it's the, one of the most mystical, wonderful happening. Your devotee is just going to London. He said they're going to London to meet the Beatles. I mean, Beatles was the biggest phenomena in those days, in the late 60s. It's not like it's so easy to meet them. And somehow they managed and built a good relationship with them. And from there, Hare Krishna mantra was chanted all over Europe. So the Prabhupada imposed all these so many rules and regulations and talked a lot about austerities, this and that. No, Prabhupada never talked about all these things. He just says, serve Krishna, chant Hare Krishna. Serve Krishna. Surrender Krishna. Try to do the best you can. That's all. Simple. And that's how, you see the picture of Prabhupada? The mudra holding? Yes. Just chant Hare Krishna. Just serve Krishna and be happy. Simple. Our process is very simple. Don't get too complicated. Alright, thank you very much. Is there any comments? Any questions? Yes, bro.
Thank you for the nice class.
Yes, thank you.
I just thought you're speaking like, you know, our process is there, we shouldn't have so much extra austerity. It's like, not international society rules and regulations, you know, it's about Krishna consciousness. But at least in myself, I can see this tendency where I can use that as an excuse to be lazy. Rules and regulations, let's go for the easy way. So maybe you could comment on that.
Well, if you follow the process of Krishna consciousness, say in the class, the ashram, the whole day is so filled with so many activities. There's no question of being lazy. The lazy tendency can creep in, when, especially for the grihasa living outside. They have the challenges to be lazy, to be a bit slack in the devotional practice. So they have to be more vigilant. But if we're living in the association of devotees, there's too many activities to become lazy. Isn't it? Yeah. And we have austerity, we have fasting days. And Ekadasi, we chant extra rounds. And if we want to practice more austerity, chant more rounds. Now instead of 16 rounds, we can do 20 rounds, or 25 rounds, or whatever, as long as we can maintain it. That's the greatest austerity. Krishna says that clearly in Bhagavad Gita, of all austerity and chanting of japa. Chant more. Does that answer the question?
I guess I was thinking like something, for example, like when we enter the temple room, we're supposed to like pay obeisance to the Lord Vaishnava, listen to deities and everything. We can just be like, ah, this is some rule, no problem, Krishna accepts my bhakti, so I don't have to do these things. My point was more like that. Like there's things put in place that we're supposed to do, but in the name of like something higher, like, oh, my bhakti, we're not following what's supposed to be followed.
Yeah, that's something else. That means we start cutting things out, you know, cutting corners. So there are certain things we just have to be vigilant to apply and not try to change things. And that's one thing Prabhupada pointed out about devotees, especially in those days were mostly Western devotees. You Westerners, you love to like to change, always changing. So certain things we do, I know, like nowadays, you very rare you see it anymore. But in the old days, every day we wake up in the morning, we see the devotees. We offer obeisances. We physically bow down, offer obeisances. And usually it's someone who is more junior who take the initiative to offer business, and then everyone just bow down, offer business. Isn't it like that? In old days? Of physically offering businesses to devotee. And especially if not seen for a while, like when you go on Sankirtan, traveling Sankirtan for a week, you come back, everyone when you see, oh Prabhu, this is my business, and we physically bow down, offer businesses. You don't see that nowadays. Rarely. So that's, or we say, Wancha, that's a famous Australian one. Wancha, and that's it. What is that? You know? It's like, I cook a whole meal, and you just eat one grain of rice. I say, Wancha, here's a grain of rice. So those things are not happening. It's a very important part of our Vaishnava culture, at least our ISKCON culture, offering obeisances. So, yeah, vigilant. You just have to be careful. I remember a long time, actually, one time I was in Bhaktivedanta Manor, in the ashram, and there was this one senior devotee, he was preaching to one of the younger brahmachari. And I remember him, he was using this word a lot in the whole time. You have to be very careful. You have to be very careful in everything. We have to be very careful in what we do. We have to be very careful in executing our sadhana. We have to be very careful in chanting around. Put a lot of care in what we're doing. The care and the love, that's bhakti. You know, if we don't put care and love in what we're doing, there's no bhakti there. It's just service. We call it devotional service. Service offered in devotion. It's not just service. Any other? Get the part, yeah. Yes, bro.
Maybe just to comment on that, on the question, like, is that verse in the negative instruction?
Pardon?
Is that verse in the negative instruction, because Swami says that one should not be too fanatical about rules and regulations, but at the same time, what's the other part of that?
Rupa was about remembering Krishna and not forgetting him?
Niyamagraha.
Huh?
Niyamagraha,
that's in the neck of instruction.
Yeah.
The six things that are unfavorable for devotional service. Following rules and regulations just for the sake of following. And just rigidly, but not understanding the principle behind it. Or thinking, oh, I'm so advanced, I don't need this, I don't need that, I don't need this, and just be careless. In other words, we have to use our intelligence. Becoming Krishna conscious doesn't mean we park our brain somewhere else and just blindly following. We have to use apply our intelligence in understanding the philosophy. Apply our intelligence in understanding what we're doing. Why we're doing. And it's not just listening and listening and listening, but we also have to contemplate on what we're reading and try to understand it and absorb it. So when we contemplate and absorb what we're learning and understand what we're learning, then we're also able to repeat it. You see, sometimes when devotees speak, it also shows like how much they've actually understood the subject matter, how much they've actually realized it. When it comes out, it's clearer when they explain things. And you get it. It's just like someone describing to you, giving you direction. If they really know what they're talking about, when they explain it to you, they explain it very clear. And you can get the direction in your head, okay, this is how I get there. But if someone who has just read the map and trying to explain it to you, but has never been there before, it's different. So we have to apply our intelligence in understanding what are the essential part of Krishna consciousness, what is not. There are certain things, that principles that are stamped and sealed, irrevocable. And there are certain things that are not, you know, are non-essential, according to time, place, circumstances. And Prabhupada applied that very intelligently, very expertly, applying the time, place, circumstances. But some of God brothers take issue to that, or some of the Hindu community that take issue. Like in the early days when Prabhupada performed marriage ceremony, I mean, sannyasi don't perform marriage ceremony. Nothing to do with marriage ceremony. But if Prabhupada didn't perform the marriage ceremony, who would? There was no one else. He was it. He was everything. So he has to do it. But then later on, devotees learn how to do it, and Prabhupada don't have to do it. And the same thing with women living in ashram. In India, don't exist. And Brahmin initiation, the culture was different. India, all the women get married, serve the husband, and they share whatever the husband gets, they share 50%. But he could see, here in the West it's different. And the boys and the girls, they're equally enthusiastic in spreading Krishna consciousness, and very keen about Krishna consciousness, very eager. So Prabhupada gave Brahmin initiation. But it didn't go so far as the Brahmin trade. So the acharya, they can do that. Because again, their goal is very clear, what they want to achieve. So they are able to apply it based on time, place, circumstances, they make a little adjustment here and there. And then time changes, you make a little, but again, you have to be careful what is the essential part and what is the non-essential part. So if we do it immaturely, then we get ourselves into a lot of trouble, throwing away the essential part and sticking to the non-essential. So the bottom line is that we develop our love for Krishna. And that's the test. And the Bhagavad Gita is also explained. That's the real test. Just like someone who's eating, with every morsel of food we put in the mouth, we are becoming freer from hunger and we're getting satisfied. And our desire for eating reduces. Well, it depends on the depth of your activity. Some activities you just feel a sense of satisfaction, and sometimes you just feel a very deep sense of satisfaction. I remember when I was preaching in Stockholm, preaching center. It was just me and my wife, and there was one brahmachari doing the radio show, three of us. And we had 150, 200 guests on Sunday. And my wife would cook the Sunday feast for the whole. And devotees would come from you know, consciousness, from beauty area. They'll come and they'll preach, but they will not help. So basically, I was my wife in the kitchen, basically I was the only one, sometimes I grabbed some regular guests to help serve. I had no chance to preach. I was just serving prasadam, cleaning up everything. And at the end, when everyone has left, sometimes there's one or two guests may stay hang behind and I clean up and sit down and I get to talk to them. And at the end of the day, I still haven't eaten anything. I feel completely satisfied. I didn't even feel like I need to eat. And also another time, Guru Puja in the farm in Sweden, I did something which I was chastised for later on. There was already someone organized prasadam this serving because it was big Vyasa Puja. Devotees were coming from all over Europe. And there was like a few hundred devotees there. I just had an idea. I said, let's do something different this year. Let's have all the temple presidents, disciples, Sankirtan leaders, senior disciples, do the serving. Serve prasadam to all the devotees. And I organized that. And we did. We served. And because we were all senior devotees serving, everyone was very respectful. Sometimes on festival days when serving, Prabhu, Haribo! Hey, Haribo here! I'm all halama on this. They were very more peaceful. And we served. And we served up everything. The pot was empty in the end. And we just sat down, a few of us sit down, big smile on our face, completely happy. Completely satisfied. There was nothing left, we served everything. We didn't, sometimes, you know, the servers, they put the plate aside. We didn't do that. We just served everything. And then out of somewhere, Krishna took care of us, some devotees come, Prabhu, have you eaten? No. Yeah, there were some spare plates here and there. And they brought plates. And we all have a plate. Of course, later I was chastised because the devotee who was initially going to organize it was not happy that I hijacked his service. So I got a bill. It was okay. That's satisfaction. We all have that experience. The very fact that we're still here means we already have some taste. We all have experience of some satisfaction, some taste when we do service. Isn't it? Otherwise we wouldn't continue. Otherwise what keeps us going? That's why you keep coming back for more and more for that nectar. That's the real nectar. When we are fully absorbed in our service to serve and please the spiritual master, that's the real nectar. Right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.